Van Health got real 19.
As I was saying, I wasn't at that stage thinking much about girls, and if I did, it must have been very low in order of importance. I was just enjoying every minute of sport that I was doing. I was enjoying learning, whether it was English, whether it was math, whether it was history. I just love walking and climbing the peaks in the district. We went on all kinds of outings all over. And it was all very, very attractive. We were just spending the time in a really carefree way, which for the first time, I must admit, I allowed myself the luxury to happen, because all the time I was worried, what was I going to do, what's going to happen to me. Also, I was all the time thinking about going to Palestine. However much the idea of coming to England was attractive to me, there was, to start off with, we were told that we came only here for rehabilitation. And we were not given the assurance that we were brought here in order to settle here. And most of us, and I belong to the majority, because of our experience, we simply believed that there is no other place for us than to live in Palestine, in our own state, in our own freedom, not being beholden to anybody. This was really first and foremost in our mind, even when we came here to England. We were very firmly of the opinion that as a result of our experiences, that it is time that the Jews have not just their own identity as Jews, but they live in their own state as and are the the creators, or rather they order their own destiny. Rather than to be on the mercy of other people. Now, when I arrived in England, one of the people who waited for us was Leonard Montefiore. Mr. Leonard Montefiore came from a very aristocratic Jewish family dating back a few centuries. And he was waiting until the last plane arrived, and I was on that last plane, because in that plane were also a lot of young children. When I say young children, I mean between the age of about 2 and 10. There were about 25 of them. And when we were traveling back from Carlisle to Windermere, he was sitting and he was holding a child on his lap. And we got engaged in conversation. And our language was German. He was a first-class linguist. He could speak fluent French, fluent Russian, and fluent German. He was a wonderful man. I mean, people like Leonard Montefiore are very far and few between. They're very rare. He had his whole life he devoted to charity, to charitable causes and helping other people. A man with a great humility and tremendous sense of humor, and very aristocratic in every way, very English, very correct, a most wonderful human being. I got to know him a lot better, and I used to meet him quite a lot, and the more I used to see of him, the more I realized what a wonderful human being he was. Of course, I learned a great deal more after his death, but at the time, this was my first encounter with him, and I'm very privileged to have come across a person like Montefiore, because really, he taught me a great deal, and he had a great influence on me as well. Not just in what he was to say, but in the way he behaved and the way he acted. First of all, I would have never ever believed when I met him that he was really, that he came from an aristocratic family. His attitude was one of, that is like everybody else. His clothing, he was wearing a very old mech, you know, nothing different from any average person that you would pick up in the street. He really oozed humanity the minute you spoke to him. And I think he must have, the conversation sort of started when he asked me what I would like to do. And I told him that I want to go to Palestine. And he asked me, why do you want to go to Palestine? And then I gave him a whole story why every Jew, wherever he is, should go to Palestine, and there should be a Jewish state, so that the Jews should live. I mean, I don't want to go into, because it's not the subject of my interview. But he listened carefully, and he said to me, yes, he says, I understand, but you've got to understand too that there are a lot of people whose experience is not like yours, and they don't feel the way as you do. And for instance, take me, I fought in the First World War, and my parents, my grandparents, were all born here. England is not like Poland, like Russia, like Germany, and so on. And we feel very English, and we feel that this is our home, and there is no need for us to go anywhere else. We are treated in exactly the same way. We have the same rights as everybody else, and so on and so on. And England, you will find out, is a great country. And I listened to him, and I said, yes. I said to him, you talk like the German Jews used to talk, but look what happened to them, and so on. Anyway, it was a long conversation, and this was our first encounter. And a few days later, when he was walking there, he noticed me, and he walked up to me. He said, you're the young man who told me that I must go to Palestine, you know. And he laughed. Anyway, I was merely telling you this was our intention. But to go to Palestine from England was practically impossible, because there were because of the quota, because there was only such a small quota, because there was such large demand of Jews to go to Palestine in those days, that there were those who were living under very difficult conditions who had priority. We were at the moment taken care of, and people thought, what's the point of sending them? So, in the meantime, we were going to be here in England. We were 300 in Windermere, then in November, another group of about 220 came from Germany. They came to Southampton, and then they were sent to different places all over the country. And subsequently, there were various groups that came, and in total, by about the middle of 1946, altogether 732 came. Now, they couldn't keep us in Windermere all the time. In any case, it was not conducive to keep us all together in one place. So the policy was to split us up into hostels. And the hostels were all over the country. Now, what was happening was there were various groups that were vying for our allegiance, of our allegiance to their organization. So, for instance, you had the very religious organizations who said, look, we would like to take as many boys as possible who are religious, because we want them to grow up in a religious way. Then there were those who were the Zionist groups, and then there were right-wing, left-wing, you know, all kinds. But we were given the choice. There was no question of being told, you go here or you go there or whatever. We were told, look, there is an opportunity for you to go to London, where there is such and such a religious hostel. There is an Alton, a very left-wing Zionist group that is going to take care of you. There were those who had still certain, they were still not completely recovered and had spots on their lungs. Some of them had consumption. So they had to be sorted out. And they had to be sent to special convalescence homes. There was one that was sent to Glasgow. Another one was sent to here in the south to Ashford Sanatorium. They were the very sick ones, really, who had trouble. Some of them had only one lung left. Because we were closely examined when we came in every way. We were given our choice. I wanted to go, I knew what I wanted to do. And that was, I didn't want to go to a religious hostel, and I wanted to go to London. Because London, to me, was the place, and I was really yearning for London. So, and there was a hostel that they were setting up, which was under the auspices of a Zionist organization. We were told whoever wanted to join that group, there was only room for about 30. But what happened, there were many who wanted to go to a religious group, they were sent to the various hostels, and there were a few small groups left, small groups of about 6 or 7 who did not conform to any of the patterns that were provided for us. So this last hostel, we were one of the last hostels, one of the last groups to leave Windermere, which was in December 1945. And we were about, there were 7 of us who became very close, and we said we're going to go together, whatever happens, wherever it is. And then there were another group who couldn't quite fit in here or there. So we finished up being a group within groups. We were about 5 or 6 different groups. There were about 30, 32 of us. The hostel where we were going to go to was Loughton Hostel. We called it Loughton Hostel because it was in Loughton, just past Woodford. So we arrived there just, I think, a day or two after the beginning of the new year, because before the hostel was ready, the hostel wasn't quite ready. We were sent to different places for a few days, for a couple of weeks. And when we arrived, Loughton was the most beautiful place. It was a large garden with a lake and beautiful bed flowers. And it shows you the ignorance of our ignorance. We arrived, and suddenly, we didn't quite get off the bus, where suddenly one of the boys came running. He says, I'm not staying here, I'm getting out of here. So he said, what is the matter? So he said, what do you mean, what's the matter? He said, they brought us here. This is the cemetery here. So we said, what? A cemetery? You can't believe it. So we went, and he showed us, and you see, the flower beds had names, proper names. And so once he said that these are all people who have been buried here. So most of us thought that he must be right. So we told the man who was in charge what has happened. So he says, what are you talking about? What kind of cemetery? So this is a... So he says, what, this? We said, yes. So he burst, he had a marvelous sense of humor. He burst out laughing. He says, what? He said, do you realize what this is? These are names of the flowers. We really didn't know where to hide our faces. Well, I'll tell you an interesting story in Windermere, just to give you an idea about what we were like and how we were thinking. You see, after breakfast every morning, we all went to the main hall, where we were waiting for the post. So the name was called out, so on. And every time a name was called out, you see, because it was people were getting letters from relatives, relatives from abroad. Some of the boys who came here. Incidentally, I keep on talking about boys, but there were only 30 girls amongst our group. Only 30. Even fewer girls survived than boys at that age.
Why was that?
Altogether, fewer women survived. Well, because the girls, you see, in order to survive, you had to go to work. And girls at the age of 12 were not accepted to work. Boys, somehow, in some places, they managed to get accepted. But very, very few girls were accepted. So in most places, girls were automatically, and women were automatically sent to the guest chambers. So in the main, there were not many women who survived, and not many girls of the same age who survived. We were waiting, and it was really anybody who could be there and he could watch us, what a pathetic lot we must have been when we when we were just waiting. It was a ray of hope, you know, that maybe somebody is alive. And somebody got a letter. We were all waiting to see who is it from. And then somebody got a letter from an uncle who's from the United States, and the uncle says that he's heard that he is alive and that he's sending him some money, or they're sending him a parcel, and then he was waiting for a parcel and so on. And one of our friends one day got a letter that his uncle from New York, that he's sending him a parcel. And every morning after the letters were called out the names and he didn't get his parcel, he used to go up and say, is there a parcel for me? And of course, so one of the boys was had a good sense of humor, and also he was very keen on playing tricks. And he says, you know what, we'll play a trick on our friend. And we went and we made up a parcel of all kinds of bits and pieces that we managed to get together. And the object of it was to put them, we used to get chocolates. Chocolate was still on ration at the time. In fact, most food was on ration. But we got the wrappings of the chocolate, and we put in soap into it. And then we made up this parcel. And one day, after the letters were given out, about an hour later, one of us came running and said, look, there is a parcel from your uncle. And he sort of says, let me have the parcel. So he says, no, you're not going to get the parcel. You're going to share it with us. He says, no, it is my parcel. I'm not sharing it with you. Anyway, he said, we're not getting the parcel unless you share the chocolate with us. He says, okay, I'll give you some. Anyway, starts opening up. Then there's the chocolate. I want some chocolate. Everybody was shouting. So He says, so he thought that obviously he's going to lose all his chocolates. I said he might as well eat whatever he can. So he unwrapped one bar and he started biting in. And he said, oh, this doesn't taste like chocolate, it's more like soap. So this boy, the one who thought of this idea of the parsnip, he looked at him and he says, you see, a peasant remains a peasant. He's never eaten chocolate in his life. And so now when he gets a nice piece of chocolate, American chocolate, he thinks that it is soap. Ha, ha, ha. And we all burst out laughing. And of course, his pride was now being touched and he would not have it. He says, what? Okay. And he started eating it. And he was eating it and we were absolutely bursting with laughter. And he wouldn't have it. So we were saying, come on, you must let us have some. Anyway, I'm telling you, really, how deprived we were that we did not really know any difference between what is chocolate and what is soap. I mean, that when eventually, when we edged on the boy and told him that it is not that it is chocolate, and he would eat it as chocolate because he didn't know any better. Now, this same boy, let me tell you something, in case you think that maybe he was backward. He subsequently emigrated to Israel. He went to work for a very large factory, where he became a director of that factory, and an advisor, technical advisor. And enjoyed a very high position, selling to all over the world, to England, to the United States, very sophisticated weapons. And now he is a co-owner of a very large factory making very minute pieces of articles for aeroplanes. So I'm really trying to show you how deprived we were that we didn't distinguish between one thing and another. We didn't know this question of flower beds, the question of chocolate, and soap. Another thing, we felt very insecure for a very long time, because whilst it was already so many months, but when we were in Windermere, some of the boys, when the food was passed on, they thought that they may not get enough. So they used to hide some of the food, pretending that they never got it so that they can have it afterwards. So whilst one talks about recovery, for some it may have been quicker than others, but in the main there was always this sort of holding back, just in case they won't have enough. And even when we lived in the hostel, there used to be problems with some of the boys who always sort of felt that they haven't got enough and they must get it. And some of the people in charge of us didn't know how to deal with them.
Did you communicate with the people back in your hometown in Poland?
Yes, I immediately informed my uncle and my aunt. And I discovered that my aunt then went to Germany. And then she discovered that her daughter was sent to Sweden, because from Bergen-Belsen a lot of children were sent to Sweden. And my sister, incidentally, also finished up in Sweden. Now, when I was in Windermere, there was a rabbi who came from South America searching for families. From those of people who lived in South America, they gave him lists of people whom they were looking for. So he came and he told us that he is going to Sweden. And when I heard that he's going to Sweden, I told him, because I heard from my aunt wrote to me that she said that my sister and my cousin were sent to Sweden. So I asked him to see whether he can find my sister. After about 2 weeks, I received a letter. On one side was his writing, on the other one was my sister's writing, saying that he contacted her and that she then told me about what happened to her, how she was liberated, and how she came to Sweden. Now, when I heard that she was in Sweden, I then made inquiries with the same committee that brought us to England, whether it will be possible for us to be reunited. And they promised me that they will do so. And they received permission to bring her to England. And in March 1947, she was brought to England and we became reunited.
How old would she be then?
Well, my sister is a year younger than I. So when she came here in 1947, she was 16 years old because she was born in September. So she was 16. I was 17 at the time. And she came here and she went to learn English and shorthand typing. And after a year, she got her shorthand typing and English and she started working.
What were you doing at this time?
What was I doing? Well, when we were in the hostel, when we came to London, we were still learning in the hostel, we were still learning English and we were learning all kinds of subjects, history, mathematics, Hebrew. I wanted very much to study. And we were told that we must try and become as independent as soon as possible. And the best thing for us to do is to learn a trade and go out to work. And one day, a local rabbi who represented the community living not far away from Loughton, which was a community in Forest Gate, came to us and he asked, how can you help us? Because he said the community wants to help us. So they got extra food for us. And then I happened to talk to him and he asked me what am I going to do? And I said, well, I would like to study. And there were a few of us who wanted to study. So he said, I'll see what I can do. And he went and approached the Western local authorities, education authorities, and asked them whether they could help out in taking us into a school. So they said yes. And then we were told to go and see headmaster, which was a co-education school, a day continuation school. It was neither secondary or grammar. It was one of those unusual schools where sort of children sort of fall out from any sort of special school, go to that place. It was mixed. So there were about 12 of us who were accepted.